Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter, at Andy Herman NFL. We are being joined, of course, by the one and only Perry Goldstein. You can find her on social media at Perry underscore Goldstein. And Wisco Grant, Grant Bills. You can find him on social media at Wisco Grant. Perry is at Packs What She Said. Grant's on the Wisco Sports Show. Also want to mention to you that we are presented today by Alchemy Wealth Management. Check out Ryan Nelson over at retirewithryan.net. Get set for your retirement. I know it's one of those things that we put off for forever, but make sure you're taking care of it. You can book a free retirement consultation, normally $175, right now by going there, retirewithryan.net. Check it out right now. Perry Grant, not what we were expecting, not what we were hoping for. It is a Monday that is not a victory Monday. Those are my least favorite types of Mondays. But friends, how the heck are you doing?
Yeah. Grant?
I don't let Packers losses ruin my mood. I let lots of other things ruin my mood. But that Packers game got close. Like that was close to a day ruiner, at least as much as a regular season game can be.
How about Brewers losing 2-3, Badgers losing brutally, and Packers losing all in one weekend? Does that get you closer?
The Badgers have actually become kind of, and I'm in Madison, like I'm in the heart of it here. The Badgers have actually started to just become an entertaining hate watch. As soon as you just kind of let go and you're like, all right, let's see how much I can get mad at this, then it's actually kind of entertaining. The Brewers, it's cool they got to celebrate. They clinched. It's just now they're all hurt. Like everyone on the team is hurt. So I don't know. But nice to do the champagne. I'm glad they had fun. That looked cool.
Something, I guess. But yes, we've got a lot to jump into with a very frustrating, very, very frustrating, disappointing, lackluster Packers game. All right, let's get to our key takeaways. Packers lose 13-10. Perry, I'll start with you. How are you feeling after this one, and what did you take most from this game?
Okay, I'll just say that a Packers week three loss to a non-conference opponent doesn't hurt me because I'm a Mets fan. So I'm just going to leave it at that. In all seriousness, I don't know. I oscillate between being like, is this loss? I feel like it's like the shock of the ending of the game that's sticking with me. When I take myself like a little bit away from it, I'm like, they did not play a clean game. The defense did everything to keep them in. I think the Browns defense is like actually more legit than people are giving them credit for, like for sure. So you went into this like maybe feeling like this was like a gimme game, and like it absolutely was not. I actually don't think the players did. I think it was more from like a fan perspective. So like I just said, a week three non-conference, you know, loss, like they should be 3-0. Like they should have won this game. Absolutely. I think there's plenty to take away from it. I'm sure we'll get into like the penalties and the self-inflicted wounds, but I don't feel as bad, like leaving this game than, maybe some other fans do. I don't know.
Grant?
To piggyback off of what Perry just said, I agree. If they come back strong and look great against Dallas, and right, rebound nicely, then this loss can easily become that loss that you look back at the end of the year and think, oh yeah, that was really weird. Yeah, that was back in September. That's right. That happened. That was weird. And most seasons, look around the NFL, most teams have losses like that. So this loss could be that. I hope it's that. I don't know that it will be that for sure, but I'm not treating this, I'm not labeling this definitively as a catastrophe. My biggest takeaway, and not the only detail that's worth talking about, we'll get into everything else, but my most frustrating takeaway is the special teams. I don't understand how they can have a great kicker and a great punter and I think a great long snapper. I don't know. Everyone seems to think he's great. And the special teams are still such a weakness. These huge field position swings, there's a penalty on every return or on every punt. None of the returners know when they're supposed to catch the ball. You're like, well, Matthew Golden's a rookie. He shouldn't be out there. Well, Rich Bisaccia is putting him out there. So and it's way too frustrating because a lot of times a Matthew Golden or a Jaden Reed or whoever will have a bad return moment and then they'll get yanked halfway through the game. It's like, well, if you were on a hair's edge with him already. He shouldn't be out there. And I was thinking about this in the car after the drive. I just drove around for hours after the game today. Not really. I had to drive, but I was thinking while I was driving, the last three Packers losses, the Bears game in the final week of the regular season last year ended with Matt LaFleur taking a timeout because somehow the special teams coach, who's also the assistant head coach on the sideline, was not clear about Brandon McManus's range. The playoff loss to the Eagles started with Keyshawn Nixon just slamming his head into a defender and fumbling the ball. And then today, they get a field goal blocked, and it was the same mess. McCarron pointed out on the radio broadcast. I was listening in the car. They had the same issue on a previous field goal. And he's like, watch out, that side, they really got a good rush. I don't understand. Like that to me is what I'm left this game thinking about. And I don't know that it's going to be an issue the rest of the year, but it just feels like every year it's this thing. And I just don't get it. I don't understand it at all.
I knew we were going to get a Grant Rich Bisaccia rant. I just didn't realize we would start the show with it. It feels appropriate because this has been your take for a very long time. But
I just want to know what he does. And I know he's the assistant head coach, but like, okay, well then is he helping to have them more prepared to play? Because then we're going to talk about all the, you know, the pre-snap penalties and the concentration stuff. It's like, okay, well, he must not be helping there, or he's not helping very much. I just want to know what he does. That, like, that's it. And I think that's a reasonable question. It's just really, really frustrating.
Yeah. So Aaron Nagler and I did like a preview episode right before the season, and we're talking about offense, defense, and special teams. And we get to special teams, and you know, Aaron's asking the questions like, all right, you got the kicker, the punter, the long snapper, you know, there's some return options. Like you've got, you know, you go and get Neiman and Zane Anderson, and you've got all these players that, you know, it's like, it looks like this could actually be a good special teams. Do you believe that this could be? I said, no, I do not. I absolutely don't believe that this can be. I said, I'm done. I'm absolutely done believing every single year that they're going to put together a competent special teams. Why ever in the rest of my lifetime would I believe that your Green Bay Packers are going to put together a competent special teams? They could have the best kicker, the best punter, the best long snapper, the best kick returner, punt returner, and everything else.
The best special teams coordinator. The most highly paid coordinator.
Special teams coordinator known to man. I will not trust it one iota, one ounce. I will not believe it for the rest of my life. And it'll come back to haunt them in the most inopportune times. There's not a single person out there. I don't care how optimistic you are. And you guys know I'm a very optimistic person. There's not a single person out there that when that kick was getting ready, that just thought like, yeah, this is going to go off without a hitch. I'm not saying that I expected it to be blocked, but it was certainly in the back of my mind of like, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all if this thing just ended up getting rejected right back in the kicker's face. Bam, rejected right back in the kicker's face. Like, no, there's no chance that I'm ever going to believe a Packers special teams for the rest of my life. So no, I'm not super stunned by this. We get blessed with decades of great quarterback play, but in reverse, we are blessed also with the 32nd ranked special teams from here up until eternity. It just apparently is going to be what it is. So I've taken that pill. I've swallowed it. I've choked it down with as much water as I possibly could. And I'm just dealing with it at this point in time. So, let me back up from special teams, just kind of go over my key takeaway here. I don't care all that much in season. I'm a little bit different when I watch this stuff. I care about wins and losses when it comes to, you know, I would like this team to have a bye, you know, going into the playoffs and have home field advantage. That seems like it could be very important come the end of the year. And just going back to special teams for a moment, on a day where the Buccaneers needed a game-winning field goal, the 49ers needed a game-winning field goal, the Eagles needed a field goal block at the end, all three of their special teams came through for them in huge moments. The Packers did not, and had two chances, right? They could have either just made the field goal or tried to block a field goal on their own. We'll get to that more later.
I like that. Hold that against them too. Not only did they not make their field goal, they didn't block the other one. I like that. Yes.
For sure. And not only that, but they're offsides in the play too. So even had he missed, they would have given him another opportunity. Kudos to that.
Can you imagine if he had missed? They
deserved it. Honestly, rub it in their damn faces. They absolutely would have deserved it in that situation. But my big takeaway from this one isn't necessarily the winner. I look at things long-term of like, what are potential Achilles heels when they get to the playoffs, when they are actually playing when it matters, right? And I come out of this game more concerned about two things than I would have liked to have been. One is the special teams, the aforementioned. Even though I didn't necessarily have a lot of faith going into this whole thing, I still now have more concern about the special teams. But the bigger one to me is by far and away the offensive line. Now, I do not expect the offensive line to have as bad a game of this the rest of the season. I don't expect it. I hope like hell they do not at any point. But at the same time, I went back and looked, and I probably should have called this out more in hindsight. I had a pretty negative grade on the offensive line through the first 2 weeks of the season in games where conditions were pretty good, meaning they had early leads. They were able to kind of pass run. They kind of do what they want. And I still didn't like how the offensive lines played in that game. I have a feeling it's going to be much worse after this one. And I know Zach Tom injured, Aaron Banks goes out injured, but I now have like more concern than I would like going into week four of the regular season about this Packers offensive line. Cause that's one of those things where if you can't get it corrected, it's just a complete massive issue for your entire team because you can't run with Jacobs. You can't pass with Love. I heard a lot of stuff about the play caller, Matt LaFleur. There's just not a crap ton on your play sheet when you can't run block and you can't pass block. Good luck figuring out a play call to make in that situation. So that's my big takeaway is the offensive line played like absolute hot garbage today, and they need to get better very, very fast, or that's going to be a major issue for the rest of the season.
My concern too about the offensive line is like they moved everybody around. So there was like three different starting offensive lines in this game alone. And I get it. Walker came off
because they had to fix his helmet. So then, like, they rotated guys. That's
going to happen. I get, like, I don't know. That feels like an outlier situation.
Yeah. I'm just saying that's how wild it got. You're talking about moving around.
But you're like, Jordan Morgan, he is starting. He's not supposed to be starting, right? He's like that first, like next man up. You're asking him to play two different positions on the offensive line, not even on the same side. He moves from right tackle to left guard. And like, I think that's a tall order for anyone, but a rookie, he had a bad day. To your point, Andy, there were so many penalties. The Packers offense finally gets in good positions. And then there's a penalty that backs them up into third and long. And like this Browns defensive front is going to tee off of you on third and long. Like that is, you could see it. And even the guys that you expect to play well, who don't move around, like Elgton Jenkins, like didn't have a good day either. Just completely like left Jordan unblocked for a sack. So I'm with you. I'd like, again, if I'm going to be the optimistic side here, like I hope that in future games, there's not three different five men out there over the course of four quarters. But injuries happen, and clearly they're happening early. And the Packers, like their offensive linemen, just need to step up in those moments. And they did not.
Well, the frustrating thing about the injuries is you could treat those as an outlier, but Zach Tom re-injured an injury. He obviously shouldn't have played today. And we can talk about like whose final decision that is. Like, did Matt LaFleur was he misjudging medical information that he got? And then Aaron Banks, he's been hurt more often than he's been healthy since they've signed him, which is a little concerning considering they paid him. It's not like they paid him a bajillion, but they gave him a very, very nice starting O-lineman contract. So those injuries and those issues concern me a bit. And I think the reason why the O-line today freaks me out, Andy, and I think Perry, you hinted at this too, is kind of feels like we think the Packers have a good O-line and they're deep, and then they play Philly or they play Tampa in the playoffs or Cleveland. And I think this front is a really, really high level front. And it's like, oh, you're good until you play one of those defenses. And then it's a car crash, right? Then it's a fire drill. It's not just that it's a little bit worse. Like everything kind of falls apart. So that's, I think it's why it's especially concerning is we've seen it before and we've seen it in like the worst moments this Packer team has had in recent years.
I want to talk about the Zach Tom injury because I talked about it in the pregame show because there was a lot of people in the pregame show are like, I don't want Tucker Kraft to play in this game. I don't want Zach Tom to play in this game. And I'm just like, we don't have the information to judge that in any way, shape, or form, right? Like, I just have to trust the medical staff that they're not going to put players in a position to re-aggravate injuries or have this issue come up. Like, I just, like, how am I supposed to judge it ahead of time of, like, if they think they can play, if Tom thinks they can play, if Kraft thinks, there's only so many of these things, and every game matters, as we saw. This was a game that they had to go out and earn. And so I trust them to put their players in the best. I can't say that anymore. That last year, Jair, Jordan Love, Christian Watson all probably came back in situations that they should not have come back in. Zach Tom today clearly should not have been out there. And Matt LaFleur admitted as much in his post-game press conference. All of those could be unique, random, circumstantial things. Maybe Watson's, you know, injury happens regardless if there was a pre-injury or like coming back too soon or anything like that. I don't know how each of them works, but I certainly am not going to just give the benefit of the doubt anymore. You can't go into that game planning for Zach Tom and have his oblique last one play and then be like done. And now you have to change everything up on the offensive line. I would have to assume that they probably have a little bit of a better plan going into that if they know that Zach Tom is not going to be able to play in that game. And it, like they were like, obviously the Rashid Walker thing ended up being just a helmet thing, but had it actually have been an injury, they were down to their final five. Like that would have been only five guys left. They didn't have another player after that. And so I just think they've got to be better with knowing the status of those injuries. And if there's something like that, and maybe this was a freak thing, I don't know. Maybe everything checked out and it just twisted the wrong way on one play because of something, whatever. And maybe nobody could have possibly foreseen that coming. I don't know. I don't have the medical charts, right? And even if I did, I wouldn't know what the hell to do with them. But it certainly seems like there's been a trend of players coming back too soon from injury and them getting aggravated or having further injury right off of it. And that has to get fixed in some way, shape, or form. All right. Let's talk about something slightly positive before we tear this team to shreds again. Let's talk about our Luigi's Pizza players of the game. So let's go over who actually was impressed. I'll start. I'll give you guys a second to think. I thought Rashawn Gary was fantastic in this game. When you start looking at players that, you know, we thought would be benefited by Micah Parsons being on this team, we thought, well, Rashawn Gary's going to go into that number two role. He's going to get a lot of one-on-one matchups. This has the potential to be really cool and like really beneficial for him. I think we saw that a great deal today. Had the only two sacks on the day for Green Bay, but was also had another play where he was super I think the play got called back via penalty, but was super disruptive on another play. Had some good plays in run defense. First glance, I thought Rashawn Gary was fantastic and certainly deserving of his kudos in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think mine would be Javon Bullard, which is why him getting hurt is alarming. And I know we'll talk about all the injuries coming out of this. We've alluded to them. But besides maybe getting bowled over on one tackle, I feel like he has become like such a sure tackler. He's always flying to the ball. He's always stopping guys like, you know, no like yards after the catch, really, if Javon Bullard is the first one there. And I think mostly to me, it stands out because A, he had kind of a rough rookie season. We were high on him, right, coming out of the draft. And then you're like, not having the best time, but he was really thrown in to be a starter. Just like that jump that you expect from year one to year two is really showing up. And I think that he also like had a quiet camp. Like Andy, you were there, but like, I don't remember hearing much about him, like good or bad, just like, yeah. No. And all of a sudden he's just like flying everywhere and playing with just like such incredible speed. So I hope he's okay. Cause that secondary gets real thin if we start losing starters. But I think he's just like jumped off the page to me.
I like that a lot. Grant, how about you?
My Luigi's player of the game, I actually pulled up the box score and the numbers are way less impressive than I would have thought. But let's just say a player through 3 weeks who continued to trend and make me feel good about him today. I'm continuously impressed with Dontavian Wicks. And it's not like he's making like Odell Beckham one-handed flank. There's just a lot of catches where it's like, that's not a super easy grab. Like that's not a given. And he hasn't always been a player who's caught the easy ones, let alone the intermediate or the really challenging balls. And it just seems like through 3 weeks, even though he hasn't had some gaudy explosion or like some, you know, eye popping catch, it just seems like he's leveled up a little bit. And that makes me feel a lot better about this offense, especially with Jaden Reed being out. So I'll say Dontavian Wicks, even though I think he only had two catches. I'm glad I checked. Cause that kind of changes the way that I framed my player of the game, but I'll say Wicks.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is on offense, it's hard for anyone to put up any sort of box score stats in this one when there's just no offense going on whatsoever. The line can't protect and you can't get first downs. Tough to put it, but I do like the way that Wicks is playing. No question about it. Make sure, of course, even that there's no victory pizza on Monday, that you're getting your Luigi's frozen pizza fix. It also is really good for coping. So if you're dealing with a loss and you need something to get you through the week, there's no comfort food quite like a Luigi's pizza. So check it out. I already had my fresh dough rising pizza after the game to help me cope with it. It helped quite a bit. So you can pick those up at your local grocer as well. Follow them at Luigi's Pizza and, of course, Luigi's Pizza. Packadaypod.com. I actually just want to go back to one thing on a key takeaway that I meant to mention. I forgot. I just thought Zach Cruz did such a great job of putting this so succinctly. I kind of had in my notes of like, if you were to put together a script of what would need to go wrong in order for the Packers to lose this game, man, did the Packers do a great job of following that script to a T. And per Zach Cruz's tweet, he said 5 sacks, 14 penalties, average 3.8 yards per play, have a key turnover and a blocked field goal at the end of the game. Damn, is that a perfect way to lose a game to the Cleveland Browns. So everything that we talked about going into it of like, we said like Myles Garrett, but don't let the defensive line beat you for Cleveland. The defensive line completely beat them into submission. Like, don't have a key turnover in a bad spot. They had an awful turnover in a horrible spot. Like, don't let a big special teams play change the game. They literally had a special teams play change the game. It was the exact script that we wrote up. And honestly, if they don't have the blocked field goal, if they just don't have the stupid turnover, if they do anything better than 3.8 yards per play, if they get the run game going, like just any of it goes just a little bit better, they win this game probably easily. And instead, a loss and 2-1 for Green Bay. Let's talk about this. Oh, go ahead, Perry.
We'll probably talk about this going into the offense, but I definitely want your guys' thoughts because this was my, I guess not a takeaway because it's offense related, but I know that we will never know this because butterfly effect is real, but I feel like the turnover by Jordan was really the catalyst for kind of the down. I know it was a tough day. It was a slog. I want your guys' thoughts on this because maybe I'm overreacting. And he's been great through 3 weeks. He had a tough day today, obviously getting sacked 5 times.
Yep.
But like that decision for me was just like everything kind of tumbled downhill from there. And I am not one to like put a loss on one player because obviously
one play, right?
It's a team sport. But when I look at this game as a whole, and obviously it's been a few hours of recording, a number of hours after this game, I'm like that, even if you just go, if you punt there, right, you throw the ball away and you punt, like that game looks, this game looks different because the defense kept them in it the whole time. I mean, when your defense shuts them out, you expect to win. So I want your thoughts on like, I don't like to put blame. Like if I'm going to pinpoint one play where I think things really took their turn, it's that one.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can actually get you paid. So don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks where it's good to be right. Now, we're getting set for the Micah Parsons revenge game as Green Bay gets set to take on Dallas in week 4. And let's just say I'm expecting a huge, and I mean a huge bounce back from Green Bay's offense led by Dontavian Wicks, Romeo Doubs, and Josh Jacobs. And I'm also expecting Micah Parsons to make a little bit of an impact in this game as well. Now, here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections. And if you get your picks right, you could cash in. And make sure to check out Flex Play, which allows you to still cash out even if your lineup isn't perfect. You can double your money even if one of your picks doesn't hit. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Don't forget that code PACKADAY, Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
So something I like doing on my show with games like this, where like this game easily could have won by either team without the quality of play changing. Like the Packers could have won and they still would have played like dumb. Right. Like this is one of those games. So like I like to consider, okay, if that field goal just goes through and everything else stays the same, the injuries and the penalties and the Jordan Love pick, like what kind of things are we saying differently? And I actually might be on the other side of this, Perry, because I think if that field goal goes in and the Packers win, not everybody, but a lot of people who do this and talk about the Packers would be like, yeah, Jordan Love had the really bad mistake. But then what a nice moment from him in the offense to get the ball right back and to go right down, game winning drive right down the field. Look at how they bounced back. You know what I mean? And of course, the field goal doesn't go in. So we don't live in that universe. I would love to live in that universe. It might have rattled like the team as a whole, but it didn't seem to rattle Jordan because he threw a couple nice passes on that offense. Problem is then they got down there and once they got in a field goal range, they kind of made a mess of it. But at that point, that It should have been enough. So I don't know that I agree, because I feel like if that field goal goes through, we're singing Jordan's praises and the offense is so resilient and they bounce back. I don't know. That's we'll fair. Never know. But I feel like that's what fair. We might be saying.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. That's why I wanted to ask you guys. I'm like, I don't know if my gut feeling about this is right or not. Because I'm a huge I will stand Jordan. I mean, mainly Grant, what you said is like, he's so unbothered all the time. I think his demeanor is like the perfect quarterback to turn something like that around. And again, he's been great through 3 weeks. Those like bonehead mistakes like seem to be diminished, but then he takes a horrible sack and like a loss for 13 yards. I don't know. So I'm more just thinking ahead of like, are we going to do that again? Was that like a little bit of the Favre in you that's coming out in these bad moments? Or is that just like, give the Browns defense, you know, their kudos for also being very good?
I think I can marry these two things together, because I think both of you bring up phenomenal points. I want to start with Grant's point first, because I do think we have this propensity of like, it was a horrible throw. It was a horrible throw. And I'll get to that in just a moment. But I do really agree with Grant of like, he did immediately lead them right back down the field, didn't rattle them, came back stone cold, gets them into field goal range. It's a very easy, makeable field goal. And we should be talking about that as like a game-winning drive for Jordan Love. It's not absolving the interception by any means, but I think we've taken the gunslinger Farvian, like he was about to set the record for Packers regular season games with 10 games in a row without throwing an interception. Like he was this close to doing it. That's impressive in and of itself. This is the first interception he has thrown. Granted, he threw a couple interceptable balls in that week one game that one was called back and one was just dropped. But this is the first interception that he has thrown on the season. I think we're being, or like some are being unjustly harsh on Jordan for one poor decision that I don't think is indicative of how he has played on the season so far, nor in this game, nor just in general. So I understand the idea of it, the thought of it, but I think Grant's probably a little bit more, or just right in the fact that if he makes the field goal, we're probably talking about this, or maybe even spinning it, maybe rightfully or wrongly so, of like, yep, you know what? He came right back, drove him down the field, game-winning field goal, and what a moment for Jordan Love. But what I will say is I hate every freaking thing about that play, from the play call to the decision by Jordan in that situation. I take that back. Not the decision, because he doesn't see the safety. He doesn't expect the safety to be there. It's not that he saw the safety and made a poor decision to throw that throw. He has to be able to read that better. So it will go down as like a poor decision. The decision is not a bad one. It's just he doesn't have vision on what's happening ahead of him to see what's going on there. So the reason I hate that play is because I think Grant is 1,000,000% right. Or maybe actually take it back. I think it was Perry who said like, if just that's the catalyst of the loss, right? If anything, I mean, anything happens besides a pick and a return there, if even that's like a pick down the field, like there, I don't have any faith that Cleveland's putting a drive together to score a touchdown. It's only because you had it first and goal from the four and then got a penalty to put it first and goal on the one that they were ultimately able to punch that thing in. If they had to go any yards at all, I fully trusted Jeff Hafley's defense to get out of that thing. They didn't. That's the only thing. If you punt the ball away there, excuse me, if you do anything else,
It's not blocked. Yeah. I trust Waylon to get a good punt off if no one blocks it. Yeah.
Yes, fair enough. But you get my point. Like, yeah. I fully believe that they are in a situation where they're going to win that game. They're not going to allow a touchdown drive in that situation. So to me, you have to have a safe, like I know people would have hated it. I would have been totally fine with a run play there to run the clock and just punt the ball away and say, you know what? I trust my defense in this situation. Yes, it'd be great to get a first down and kind of seal this thing. I'm totally fine with making the Browns go the length of the field, something they could not do all game long, and actually score a touchdown. I'm trusting my defense in this one. But from a Jordan standpoint, you have to know when you've got, listen, the Browns did a great job of disguising this. So it's man-to-man, wide receiver, tight end, wide receiver on the other side. It's man on the wide receiver. It's man on the wide receiver. It's man on the wide receiver. He's reading his coverage. He likes the matchup. I think it was Wicks. Correct me if I'm wrong on the play. Yeah. And he likes the matchup one-on-one. We saw Wicks win one very similarly earlier in the game on almost a very similar type of situation, save for that Kraft was on the other side on that play. So it's a, it, everyone is showing man-to-man coverage. And when he gets the snap, he's reading that play to see, is it still man? And yes, it's man coverage. It's one-on-one, and he's seeing that. Now, there's linebackers inside. So there's always, but the linebackers are so far inside that the odds that they're going to get over on a quick, you know, get the ball and hitch it at that wide receiver are next to none. So you really don't feel like you have to necessarily look over and see if anyone's kind of one of those linebackers dropping in a zone. But Delpit, who's in man-to-man on the tight end, is able to read Jordan's eyes and see that he's going quick hitch into the receiver and is able to just fall off that play. And for Jordan, you read it as man. It is man. You get that exact coverage that you're looking for. Delpit's the one that's covering Tucker in man. So when Tucker goes inside, Delpit should be going inside. But Delpit reads it perfectly, comes off of his man-to-man assignment, and picks that off. But if you're Jordan, you still have to have vision in front of you. And this is something that defenses do. This is not like the Cleveland Browns invented something new by having their guy fall off a man because there's guys inside of it. That is something that defenses do. And Jordan has had that happen to him in the past, as he's mentioned. So I just think it's a really bad play call in that decision, in that situation, which Matt also owned. And I think it's a terrible, not recognizing that from Jordan. And those are just things that have to be better. So I think Jordan has to be better in that situation. I think Matt has to be better in that situation. I don't think it is some overarching narrative indicative of who Jordan is as a quarterback.
No, fair. And I mean, turnovers are so situational, right? You look at this on paper and you're like, oh, one interception. They're at, you know, net zero, but let's be real. The interception on Joe Flacco was meaningless and this one was extremely meaningful. Correct. So you have to make those decisions like based on where you are, especially in the game, the time left, et cetera. So I guess just disappointing. You both made me feel better about it. So thank you. And I'm sure we put, you know, blame elsewhere, but yeah, just hard to watch that happen at that exact moment of the game.
For sure. Very hard to watch in that moment. And again, anything else happens in that moment and it's probably a win for Green Bay. Anything that you wanted to add on top of that, Grant?
No, not really. I like playing the game too. Like what if he had thrown that interception in the first quarter, right? Versus the fourth, like if it's the same, if it's it's the same ingredients, but they're presented, they're sequenced differently. Like how do we react to it differently? And I do think it's a less damaging interception. You're like, well, he was under duress, great defense. Yeah, that'll happen. You'll have one, but because he throws it in that moment at that point in the field. And I think that's fair, right? You like the turnovers don't occur in a vacuum. So that's absolutely fair to Perry's point. I think that's a good point.
The other really crazy thing about that play. And I don't know if he like saw it at the last moment. So like tried to adjust. It was a terrible throw. Even if Delpit wasn't there, that was a terrible ball to Dontavian Wicks. Like Delpit had to actually like, I actually give Delpit more credit because if Love would have thrown that like on target, Delpit probably would have just ran it in for a touchdown, but he had to like go to the ground and make a ridiculous catch. So I'm not sure what that throw was either, but not that that's making anyone feel any better.
I hope it's because as it's coming out of his hand, he's like, oh crap.
And that's
he's
what like, I say. Like, I don't know if you kind of like saw the last moment and is like, but yeah, either way, not a great throw either on that one. Packers offense on the day, 61 plays, 230 yards, 3.8 yards per play, 149 passing yards, 31 rushes for 81 yards, and a 2.6 yards per carry. Nothing went right. We talked about the offensive line. Love was pressured on 13 of his 31 dropbacks on the day, which is, and a lot of the ones he wasn't were because he got the ball out of his hands like immediately. Jordan Morgan really, really struggled in this game. I will say, the second false start penalty of his three false start penalties was definitely not on him. And apparently they did announce it later in the stadium that it was actually Rashid Walker and not Jordan Morgan, but it was definitely Walker that moved and not Morgan. So
they announced the correction
in the stadium, I guess. So yeah. That's so apparently funny. I just want to take one negative off of Jordan Morgan's plate because he could certainly use any goodwill at this point. That was a pretty abysmal game from him. And then just the one small positive on offense, I would say, would be Matthew Golden, who had four targets. He caught all four of them for 52 yards with a long of 34. Had three carries for 9 yards. Again, couldn't really do much with any of those. But yeah, I thought overall positive for Matthew Golden.
Andy, did they have a terrible game plan for this game? Like I felt like all the running that they were trying to do, like behind the line of scrimmage with like Savion, with Matthew Gold, like the kind of like trying to stretch. I could see what Matt was trying to do, which is like stretch the Browns like horizontally and like not pushing the ball down the field really. And it wasn't working because their line was just getting to all of those. Like it just was, it was so painful to watch. Like, was it a good game plan and poorly executed, or was it a bad game plan?
I would just say this. Matt tried a little bit of everything in that game. He tried running up the middle, and Josh Jacobs up the middle went for absolutely nothing in this game. In fact, Jacobs had 16 carries for 30 yards, less than 2 yards per carry. Nothing was going up the middle. So he tried saying like, can we get things going horizontally? Can we give it to Matthew Golden? Can we give it to some playmakers to see if we can get something going outside? Nothing going outside. They tried some of the screen game. They had the one screen pass to Josh Jacobs on the outside that went pretty well. But I would say the screen game was the one thing that actually had moments. You did have a Rashid Walker, ineligible man downfield, which I thought was very ticky-tacky in that situation. But outside of that, I thought the screen game worked pretty well. But you also couldn't drop back to pass. Like in certain games, I would be willing to bet you if the pass protection was good in this one, this might have been one where Matt's just like, scrap the whole run game. We're just going to drop back to throw every play. But you couldn't do that because Jordan got hit like almost every single play. And you couldn't do anything long developing down the field because, again, you didn't have any protection. It just, I'll say it once more, when you can't pass protect and you can't run block, nothing on the play sheet and no game plan is going to absolve you of it. I actually thought that final drive that they put together, I thought Matt LaFleur did a really good job getting the fade to Romeo Doubs, which had the pass interference penalty, that little bootleg action where Tucker Kraft gets free in the flat. I thought that like they finally found a few things that they could attack that Browns defense with to get down the field, to get into that field goal range. But it ultimately didn't matter because he couldn't make the kick. I just don't think there was much. So I said in the live post game, I said, I am absolving Matt, the play caller, but Matt, the head coach, did not have this offensive line ready to play. So kudos to Matt, the play caller. I'm giving you a free pass on this one. Matt, the head coach, just gets more thrown under the bus, though, because the offensive line was pretty brutal in this one.
On the subject of the horizontal runs, it's almost like you need to grade some of these plays on a curve today. Like, yeah, those long stretch outs to Matthew Golden were only going for like 4 yards. But when you consider the Josh Jacobs runs were going for like a yard and a half with how ugly that game was and you're just trying to get out of there. It's like, OK, well, if you get four, like that actually will work because nothing else is working for, you know, I can't rely on anything to get 4 yards of play. And on Matthew Golden, by the way, I think fans go a little bit overboard, like, what was the play? Was it Detroit or was it Washington when Jordan Love just overthrew him down the seam and he had him open and it was just a couple of inches past Matthew Golden straight down the middle? And I can't remember which one it was.
Either.
But it might have been either, yeah. But fans came away from that like, oh, that should have been a touchdown. I'm like, okay, you guys understand, like, that's a really difficult throw and catch. And then for him to also run the... So I think fans go overboard with XYZ play should have been a touchdown, but that ball to Matthew Golden on the sideline, I feel like he's going to watch that film and be like, damn, I just kind of drifted right out of bounds. Like, there was a lot of grass. And it's funny because I thought that was Jordan Love's best throw of the day or one of his best throws of the day. And I'm kind of keeping tabs as we go along. I feel like Jordan Love's best throw in each of the first three games has either not been completed, it's come back from because of a penalty and hurt Jaden Reed in the process, or like Matthew Golden caught it and just drifted out of bounds when there might have been, like, again, not to be that guy, but like that could have been a touchdown. And I feel like we're on a couple week stretch now where I watch Jordan Love's best throw and like, oh, that's not going to count, or it's not going to count for as much as it should, which is kind of a bummer because he's made some really good throws that haven't really been either maximized or maybe they didn't count at all.
I'm just happy he hasn't made more better throws because who knows who else would be injured or what other catastrophic things would have happened had he put some even better throws out there. Yeah, it's one of those things that I have a lot of faith in this offense moving forward. I think the offensive line will get their issues ironed out. I will say one more time, though, just as we wrap up the offense, I'm still very disappointed in the fact that they had 10 days to kind of get some of this sorted out after the offensive line, again, did not play great in the first couple weeks, and they just really didn't get anything sorted out whatsoever. So hopefully Dallas, who was abysmal against Chicago on defense, they can figure something out, because there's not much going right for Dallas's defensive front right now. That needs to be a much better performance from the Packers offensive line in week four against Dallas. More on that later. I think we talked enough about the special teams. I think we killed that to death. Anything else we need to touch base on there?
No.
Thank God. All right. Packers, I wanted to leave the kind of the Packers defense as one of like the main things we kind of talked about at the end, because there were, I feel like, a lot of positives here. You had a defense that played really, really well. 57 plays, 221 yards, 3.9 yards per play. Rashawn Gary, we talked about. Micah Parsons, the two offsides penalties are really frustrating, but outside of that, was still very disruptive. I'd like to see this defense still get their hands on a few more turnovers. Just the one before half, which really didn't matter, was the only issue there. But outside of that, I thought you can't put anything on this defense. In fact, I would be willing to argue slash state that they gave up really 3 points. Three was on the blocked field goal return, which set them up in horrible field position. And seven was on the Jordan Love pick. I would very much argue the defense basically gave up 3 points in this game.
They were going to pitch a shutout. Like if, you know, all went according to plan. So I don't know how much more you can say. Like I said it earlier, I just like, if your defense is only giving up 10 points, let's say, like you should be winning that game. Especially like the Browns offense just could not do anything, like absolutely anything. As we knew was going to happen, like going into this game, you knew it was going to be a very good defense and a very good defense and whoever did more on offense, and you would have put money on it being the Packers being the offense that did more. So I feel good about the defense coming out of this game, even though obviously they ended up losing it.
You know, the moment or the drive that actually impressed me the most with the defense today, or something that jumped out to me that I'll mention, is the actual drive where they gave up the field goal. It was a 12-play, 63-yard drive. And the reason it impressed me is it took so much time. I mean, the clock is just rolling in the fourth quarter. And at this point, the Packers are up two scores. And then they got down in the five-yard line. And they got stung with two, I thought, pretty questionable penalties, which, by the way, like if we're going to talk about the total of penalties, the Packers and the Browns were both very sloppy. I also think this crew is pretty flag happy, especially with like contact in the defensive backfield. So I almost like, okay, there was, you know, let's say, I don't even know the total, 12 or 13 total penalties. A couple of those are like, okay, whatever. But the Browns are down within the 5 yard line. The clock is running and the Packers twice on third down plays trying to get off the field were caught with iffy penalties and then responded the next two or three plays by continually keeping them out of the end zone. And they fought on the goal line for so long to the point where I think it was Wyatt Teller. I almost said Miles Teller, like it's for a chop block and they back him up 15 yards and you're just gifted just for staying locked in and not saying, okay, well that penalty was BS. Screw this. We'll just, you know, not giving up a touchdown.
Let him in.
That drive. Yeah. Had the Packers won, especially how close it was at the end, I'd say, man, the amount of clock that they ran and the amount of time that they forced the Browns to waste on that drive. Yeah, they ultimately scored, but I was just really impressed with the way they played around the goal line and really forced Cleveland to waste a lot of time and play through a couple tough penalties, too. That was impressive.
We'll be right back. Hey friends, there are certain fall aesthetics that just bring back a multitude of personal and family memories that can't simply be replaced. A perfect autumn bonfire, the smell of fallen leaves, and of course, the best smell of them all, a perfect cut of meat searing wonderfully on a hot grill. And you know what season it is in Green Bay? It's tailgating season. That's why I already have a whole host of beautiful Omaha steaks ready for the grill this football season. I went with their fall bestsellers pack, which includes filet mignons, pork chops, jumbo franks, chicken breasts, and so much more. Now, Omaha Steaks has been America's original butcher since 1917. It's a family-owned company that has over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. And the best part is that every steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness. So get fired up for fall grilling with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Red Hot Sale event. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. See site for details. Sports are all about competition. Every snap, every possession, every clutch moment matters. That same energy is what 1v1 me brings to video games. Every single day, you can watch and stake on matchups in Madden, NBA 2K, FC, and Call of Duty Search and Destroy, All the games are streamed live, every match has refs, and payouts are instant. And these aren't just random online lobbies. These are the best players in the scene, pros, streamers, and rivals, with season playoffs and the championship game on the line. Every game matters. Over 100 million has already been paid out on the app, and the community is growing fast. If you're a sports fan, a gamer, or just someone who loves having a little extra on the line, 1v1me is where you need to be. It's not just about winning. It's about the bragging rights, too. Every match has a chat going crazy, and you can back your pick in real time. Download today and use code PACKADAY. Your first stake on the app is risk-free. That's code PACKADAY for a risk-free first stake. Do not miss this opportunity.
This Packers team is relentless. This defense, like in a way that, like, to your point, Grant, we just have not seen before so often in the past. It's like, well, you had a bad PI. We don't agree it's a PI, but either way, it's a for, and you're like immediate touchdown.
Just, like, and I had the tweet queued up. I had the smart ass tweet queued up for when the touchdown was scored. And I was sitting there with my phone ready to press send. And I never did.
Yeah. Because it's just like, and they just like get deflated. But this defense does not. This defense, like, okay, bet, like, let's do it again. And I think, you know, if you want to take anything away out of this game positive, just from like a long-term perspective, like, it's that, like, this defense is going to make you work for those points. And yeah, like, teams are going to move the ball against them. Obviously, we're going to come up against some extremely good offenses down the stretch, but if they can hold like that on the goal line, like, it's just going to change the nature of. And you would think that doing that would give them good field position because they're, you know, but no. So hopefully maybe that changes. But again, I think we're not holding our breath.
We're back to special teams right on the big swing.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I had to.
And the penalties. But, like, also, I think that's a part of getting off to a fast start and this team realizing, like, oh, we're better. I think this team is, I said this on my show last week, like, when I've never seen Spider-Man, but, like, does he get bit by a spider and he gets superpowers? Like, yes. And like the superhero trope, I've only ever seen.
He actually gets bit by an aardvark and he gets spider powers.
I knew if it was an animal bite, it would be a spider. But like the trope of the superhero, the young, like, finding the powers and just like having a blast, just wrecking stuff with it. Like, I think the Packers are in that mode right now. And I think the defense is in that mode. And they got Micah Parsons. I just think there's so much juice and so much belief that maybe defenses haven't had in the past. And I think that factors into that relentlessness that Perry mentioned.
You need the swag on that side of the ball. Like the just like otherworldly, like, arrogance to think like, well, that's fine. We're just going to next play. Yeah. And as much, you know, hate as the defensive back room has gotten going into the season, like, I think they've been playing really well. Like, Nixon and Hobbs look good. Yeah, like, Bullard really looks good. Like, the safeties are, we knew the safeties were great. Like, I give them a lot of credit because, like, they have been taking some heat. And no, like, on paper, are they the most talented defensive back room you look at? Like, definitely not. But, like, they're playing like it. And that's really all that matters.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
If there's any positive that anyone wants to take away, the Packers have a Super Bowl defense. Like, there's no question about that whatsoever. They will go into week 4 having allowed fewer points through the 3 games than any other team in the NFL. They're at 44 points allowed. The next up is Seattle with 47, followed by the Chiefs with 47, but that's not including whatever they're doing against the Giants tonight. I don't know where they're at right now in that.
They've given up a touchdown, and that's it so far. Okay.
So yeah, that'll be obviously worse. The Lions are at 48, but again, have a game against the Ravens on Monday Night Football. And then the 49ers at 49. So the Packers will go into week 4 with the fewest points allowed of any team in the NFL. This is a Super Bowl defense. Obviously, the special teams and offense have to be able to pay that off. They did not do it against Cleveland, but the defense could not have done much better through 3 weeks than what we have seen them do through 3 weeks. If you would have said, they only allowed 44 points through the first 3 weeks, I think everyone would have accepted that. You probably would have expected, like, they shut out the Browns with 0 points and probably gave up, like, you know, 24-1, 20 to the other. But yeah, we're here and the defense is legit. Jeff Hafley deserves all the credit in the world. The move for Micah Parsons has been beautiful. And this defense is playing amazing football. Just unfortunate that for their side of things, that they do not have 3 wins to show for it, because they certainly deserve the win today. And just the offense and special teams couldn't pay it off. A couple other ones really quick. Penalties we talked about, but were a major issue. 14 penalties, 75 yards. That is just the tip of the iceberg, which is going to seem crazy. The Packers called 3 timeouts to avoid delay of game penalties. That could have been 17 penalties for 90 yards right there, except they wasted three timeouts to avoid those. Furthermore, one of my favorite moments in the game was not really, but it was funny as I rewatched it. Rashid Walker is like just bear hugging a player on the play and like wrapping him around the neck. I think it was Myles Garrett, and Garrett gets the sack anyway. And the ref literally is, he's got the flag out of his pocket, has it above his head, and sees that the Garrett got the sack anyway, and literally just pulls it down and puts it back in his pocket. Like, he's just like, they're just going to declare it anyway. Why am I even remote? Why am I going to spend the time to be like holding offense number 63 penalty is declined. Like, why are we stopping the game for this? So literally is out of his pocket, ready to throw, sees the sack and is like, nah, never mind. Doesn't, like, there could have been at least like three or four more holding penalties on Green Bay that did not get called because the Browns got the sack anyway. So yeah, it was a really, really bad day from a penalty standpoint, and clearly plenty of things that they need to clean up. But silver lining, this is the most penalties that the Packers have had since week three of 2010. More Super Bowl things that are showing that they are going to win a Super Bowl eventually. They had 18 penalties and a 20-17 loss to Chicago on the road in that, game.
Is that a Thursday night game?
I don't know.
I think it was a Monday. Maybe that was a weeknight game for whatever reason. I feel like I have a memory. You know what game I thought of today was the Packers, the year they beat the Jets in the Super Bowl year, when it was like just a field goal fest. This is what I'm talking about. Uncommon opponents, AFC early weird. Like there's plenty of space, even in a very successful season, for a loss like this. It's now on them to come up in Dallas next week and be like, all right, 3-1 going into the bye. I think had you told most fans 3-1 going into the bye, we would have taken it in a heartbeat. We just wouldn't have expected the loss to come in Cleveland. But sometimes
I feel better about this loss happening. You guys tell me if you agree, in week three, where you can like kind of move on from it, learn something from it. Like nobody really like, yeah, will this loss like affect the playoffs? Maybe we can look back and say that, but also there's so much season left that like it's not as significant instead of like a week 12 or like a week 15 of just like, really? That's like the momentum you want, you know, like going into the playoffs. Like you get a stinker in the first month. It's September, and I'd rather see them like just learn some things and move on from it.
Compared to the stinker against the Bears. Yeah. Last year.
Exactly. Like,
this game was a Monday night football game, Grant, that Packers Bears game in week three, 2010, Jay Cutler, 16 of 27, 221 yards, a touchdown. And of course, an interception. Johnny Knox led the Bears with four catches for 94 yards. Jermichael Finley on one that day, nine catches, 115 yards for Green Bay. And John Kuhn led Green Bay with six carries for 31 yards. As Rodgers attempted 45 passes in a loss against Chicago on Monday night.
45 passes? Did you see?
He was 34 of 45 for 316, a touchdown and a pick. James Jones lost a fumble. Tremont Williams, Cullen Jenkins, Frank Zombo had sacks. And Derek Martin had an interception in that game. Jordy Nelson was your kick returner with four returns for 97 yards.
Damn. Fourth all-time touchdown scorer. Aaron Rodgers.
There you go.
Do we think that Tucker Kraft being hurt was impacted this offense in any way? That was another thing I wanted to ask you guys. I just came into this with questions. Like that's the least helpful thing in the world for a podcast, but I was like, he's such a difference maker. Like him being hobbled did that impact this team?
I'm still very much in the mind of not being able to pass protect and run block how hurt this team.
Okay, like, but he's part of that.
He's part of that.
He's huge in that.
Yeah, I don't think they couldn't pass protect because Tucker Kraft was. No, I know what you mean, but I'm just saying, like, I don't mean that.
Whatever.
I think fans probably overrate, like, oh, Myles Garrett's good and our O-line stinks. We'll just chip him with a tight end. Like, you can do some of that stuff. I don't know. I don't think that's ailing what or fixing what ailed the Packers today. So I guess I get where you're coming from, Andy. I don't know. How many targets did Tucker Kraft have? Did he look noticeably hobbled to you guys today? I guess nothing.
He wasn't a factor. That's why I'm asking. Like he had that great, like, you know, leak out, you know, out wide at the end. You know, they love that play with him. They run it like once a game. But he wasn't a factor, and I don't know. I'm just curious. Like he's a difference maker.
Yeah.
No, he, I mean, it certainly didn't help anything. I'll definitely say that. Like I would have liked to have seen just this offense have a little bit more ability to kind of fill in for him. Luke Musgrave did nothing in this game. So yeah, it just was frustrating to see them not being able to get anything going. So it definitely didn't help. I will definitely give you that. Speaking of injuries, our Packers injury report brought to you by Habish Rotier. Four injuries, I believe, in this game. Zach Tom, offensive tackle, obviously. I have a feeling that is probably going to keep him out a bit now as they try to get him fully recovered from that thing before bringing him back. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know a timeline, but I would assume they're going to be very cautious with him moving forward. Aaron Banks left with a different injury. He leaves with a groin injury. Not ideal there. Javon Bullard, of course, had the head injury. And then apparently John Fitzpatrick was in the injury tent at some point as well. So that is your injury report for this game. We will see how many of those ultimately cost anything moving forward. That's all I got for an injury front.
Is that it?
Just those four. Just the two starting offensive linemen, starting defensive back, and number three tight end, who was the only Packer who had a touchdown in this game. Yeah, that's it.
I like Fitzpatrick. So Friday we didn't know if Kraft was going to play. And I was broadcasting in lacrosse, and anytime I'm on location, I'm like, okay, how do I just get through 2 hours? Because if I'm not in my studio, I don't have my little things. I can't take phone calls. I did a full segment on why, if Tucker Kraft doesn't play, I think Fitzpatrick will be more productive than Luke Musgrave. I'm not out on Luke Musgrave, but again, I don't understand why fans are like, well, Musgrave's about to get it going. But you guys want to get rid of Christian Watson. But everybody thinks Luke Musgrave is just about to break out. So I don't know. Fitzpatrick, Sims, Daphne, give me all those guys. I buy into any of them more than Luke Musgrave.
I'm not giving you Dominique Daphne. I refuse to give you Dominique Daphne.
Donald Lee.
Just some other miscellaneous notes in this one. We saw Bo Melton back at wide receiver. It was just for a play, and it was kind of as a dummy play, but I love the fact that Bo Melton was back at wide receiver for a play. Inactives on the day, Donovan Jennings, Warren Brinson, and Kamal Haddon. They only needed three. Those were the three. Green Bay dominated time of possession in this one, 34-14 to 25-46. Unfortunately, that does not get you victories. You actually have to win the game. Green Bay did not do that. Bears and Vikings both win big on the day. That certainly did not make anything feel better either. I still feel like this is Detroit and Green Bay, but I also didn't think I didn't think Green Bay was going to lose to Cleveland. So what the hell do I know?
Do you think JJ, here's a question. Do you think JJ McCarthy starts another game for the Vikings this year? Let's get real spicy. Cause Carson Wentz is going to be good enough to make that thing go. And that team's awesome.
Yeah. Until he's not, like, we all have seen Carson Wentz fall.
We had all seen Sam Darnold, Perry. We had all seen Sam Darnold. No, I don't know.
JJ is going to come back.
I think JJ will for sure make another start this season. I am interested to see if this goes really well with, if this goes well with Wentz and they continue to win, and then, McCarthy's healthy, that's going to be a very interesting decision in Minnesota. And then if McCarthy struggles, like, how long is the leash? Like, yeah, that gets very, very iffy, very fast, but that's a Vikings problem. Hopefully they have to continue to deal with that, but that was a huge win for them. They definitely needed that. Chicago definitely needed it over Dallas. And then that brings us to Packers Cowboys week 4. Packers go to Dallas, Micah Parsons versus Kenny Clark on opposite sides. I tried looking right before this game started to see if we had a line yet, and we did not. I'm going to just check it really quick.
I thought it was, I saw someone.
6.5. Green Bay Packers, 6.5 point favorites in Dallas. So almost as much as they were in Cleveland. So how are we feeling about that game as we look a week ahead?
I mean, the Dallas defense looks horrific. So if the Packers are going to have a bounce back, I put in quotes if you're not watching the video of this, on offense, seems a good time as any. I'm sure Micah Parsons also has this circled. So, like, if you want to just watch him tee off, like, great. Packers historically play very well at AT&T Stadium. So, feels like one of those games where you get up for this one, you leave with a win, you go into the bye, you try to get healthy. Like, it feels like it has that energy. But to Grant's point earlier, I think it was perfectly said. Like, you gotta bounce back from this one and show everyone, like, hey, you weren't wrong about us. Sorry about last week.
Last year was littered with execution mistakes, focus errors, concentrate. Matt LaFleur said after the game, concentration errors, those pre-snap penalties, those things reared their head in Cleveland. They had not in the first 2 weeks, which had me thinking, oh, they've taken a step and they've grown. I still think they've taken a step and that they've grown. I'll chalk up a lot of those pre-snap penalties on offense to major shuffling on the O-line. I think that's more than fair. But if that stuff appears again in Dallas, then we're going to have a question split between four games. It's like, well, are they the first two games or are they the second two games? And the second two games are, you know, kind of reminiscent of last year. But I think they'll get psyched up to play the Cowboys. I would be exhausted if I'm a Cowboys fan. I would be so sick of it. I'd be like, guys, we haven't been good in 30 years and everyone gets so fired up to come in here and beat us. And I think the Packers are going to be that, especially with Micah next weekend. So yeah, if they bounce back and look great, then they're 3-1 going into the bye. And this can be a weird, you know, or we're on our way to this being a weird hiccup in the early season that we Google 15 years later and are like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was a weird game. Yeah. Fitzpatrick caught a touchdown. Remember that? Yeah, that's right. So like, hopefully that's where this ends up.
Yeah, I'm there too. Right now, this is a one-off. You can't make it a trend. You can't make it where this, you know, some of the struggles continue. Sometimes it takes something like this to really learn your lessons. Hopefully Green Bay can learn their lessons from this one. Maybe they make the field goal at the end and maybe those lessons aren't learned because, hey, we still won the game. Maybe you needed to get kicked in the face after, you know, talking about going undefeated earlier in the week. And maybe this is exactly what you need early on to understand of like, hey, you still have a lot of work to do. And I think that's, to me, the final takeaway from this one is that just trading for Micah Parsons, just getting wins early in the season, those are fun things. That in and of itself does not win you a championship. You have to be growing the entire year and getting better and advancing and perfecting your style of play, because you're going to see defensive lines like the Cleveland Browns in the playoffs or in the Super Bowl. You're going to see every challenge that's out there for you, and you're going to have to be able to make a 45-yard kick with the game on the line and not have it Dikembe Mutombo'd back in your face. Like, you're going to have to be able to do that stuff if you want to be a legitimate contender. Today, Green Bay was not, but that does not put a stake in their season. It's just, again, lessons learned. If they learn them, great. It's probably worthwhile to have it happen now. If any of this becomes, again, a trend, not a one-off, or they don't learn from it and we see these things rear their ugly head come postseason, then this loss today was for absolutely nothing. And it's just a sucky part of the season that's going to end with a sucky ending at the end of the season. So hopefully they learn from it, get what they need from it, move on, and just go out and completely destroy the Dallas Cowboys next week.
Hopefully. Like last time.
Just like always.
Yeah.
All right. Perry, final thoughts?
No, I agree with you. I think a little bit of a slice of humble pie at this point, based on the way the season's going, could end up being a good thing for them. Like, reminding them, like Matt LaFleur says it every season. It's like every week you go 1-0. Like, what happened before and what happens next, we can't think about it. It's, you have to win the game in front of you. So I hope they return back if they had veered away to that mindset, because this team has the makings of, despite this game, I think this team has the makings of a really special unit that can do a lot, but you got to go out and win. You got to go out and execute. Also feeling very grateful for the week 5 bye so that they can get healthy. Just side note. Yeah. I know people have a lot of like mixed feelings about that, but right now, based on where this team is at, very grateful for it.
Yeah. It's not a bad place to be. Grant, final thoughts?
A footnote, this didn't fit in any big picture conversation that we had, but I'd like Jordan Love to watch some film of his designed runs, because they work well. They'd work better if he didn't slide short of the sticks or slide instead of running out of bounds. Like, you're leaving 2 or 3 yards on the field. And in a game like this, like 2 or 3 yards is, I mean, my God, like 2 or 3 yards is huge. So baby steps with Jordan Love becoming a little bit more of a natural runner when it's needed. Still a couple baby steps to go. That was very Kirk Cousins-ish, sliding before the marker when he didn't have to. That's my final thought.
I think he is coached to the nth degree of like, if there's anyone remotely in your vicinity, you get the hell down. And I think in a game where he got hit on almost every play that he was passing the ball, I think he definitely wanted to be a little bit more careful that he was not taking any additional hits running the ball. I am actually 1,000,000% fine with Jordan sliding 1 yard too early rather than 1 yard too late, because I did not need him taking any more hits in this game. I understand the overall thought process. And I think maybe in a playoff game, or maybe he makes some different decisions. Hell, we saw him make a different decision just a couple weeks ago, right? Where he decided to put his shoulder down and get the angry runs scepter for the week. But and this one, on some of those read plays, I was at least okay with it. I was okay with it. All right. We've got Pax What She Said. We've got Wisco Sports Show. Anything else you guys want to plug on the way out?
No, that's about it.
No, the usual.
One podcast. This was therapeutic. This was fun. The game was not fun, but this was fun. It was nice doing with you.
Agreed. It is always fun talking to you two. I appreciate you two a ton. One just final thought. I just realized right here and right now that next week we have a New Orleans Saints at Buffalo Bills game, and that is going to be an absolute freaking train wreck. So yeah, that's not fun. Hey, it can always be worse. You could be the New Orleans Saints. So small victories on this day. Appreciate you guys a ton. We'll probably be doing this in a couple weeks, I would assume, but we'll definitely get back together, hopefully somewhere here in the near future. Follow her at Perry_Goldstein. Follow him at Wisco Grant. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack-O.
Go Pack-O.